Correct. We're learning Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is a distilled version of the Talmud, which takes out the stories and the things in the Talmud that are not halachic. And that's what the Ein Yaakov is. Now, the Ein Yaakov tells us all the things that everyone wants to hear from the Gemara, meaning everyone always wants to hear the stories, the juicy parts of the Gemara. That's what the Ein Yaakov is. There's a work that was composed about 400 years before the Ein Yaakov called the Rif, Rav Yitzhak Alfasi, the Rav Yitzhak of Fez, which does the exact opposite. It distills the halacha from the Talmud. And you just get the one-liners of halacha from the Talmud. A similar work was done by Rav Yudaigon called the Baal Halachos Gedolos. Now, we'll have to have a general introduction to Medrash, but first, you could see online, we did a long introduction, and I also wrote it out, the history of the Ein Yaakov. In a nutshell, we went through a few centuries where pope after pope decreed that the Talmud was banned, the Talmud, they were told the Talmud was anti-Christianity, and Jews that had become apostates were really behind all this. They kept urging the church to burn the Talmud, and they were successful. I mean, Pope Pius was very happy to do that, among others. You can see the notes online. I wrote it all out. You can see the dates, everything. And there was a point in history where we had 30 years where throughout the majority of Europe, wherever the church was respected, it was prohibited to own a copy of the Talmud. We don't have ancient manuscripts of the Talmud that date back 2,000 years. The most ancient manuscript that we have dates back about 1,700 years to the time after these book burnings. A lot of the Talmud was written based on people's memories. I mean,
it's only written like 1,600 years.
Do the math. If 16... He's right. I overstated it. He's right. The Talmud was written 1,600 years ago. Right. No, you're right. I added 1,000. Right. The oldest copy that we have is 700 years old. I added 1,000. You're right. He's right. Thank you. Now I have to call him Rebbe Alufim Yudai. The Mishnah says. Teaches you one thing. Okay. There was a period, approximately 700 years ago, when all the Talmuds were burnt, and then the rabbis pleaded and begged, and finally they had 30 years where they were permitted to print the Ein Yaakov under heavy censorship, not the Talmud. So Jews went out and purchased the Ein Yaakov. And from that time onward, the Ein Yaakov became a staple household item up until the last 30, 40 years. I mean, up until about 30 years ago, if you'd go into an average shul between Mincha and Ma'ariv, all the Balabat and all the people were learning Ein Yaakov. So that always captures people's interest. It's the stories of the Talmud. The one who wrote the Ein Yaakov was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo. His son was. He lived a little earlier. And now, let's begin. So, where does your copies begin? What page? 108. Great. Okay. So that's where we'll begin, page 108. The Ein Yaakov is picking up where the Mishnah paused. The Mishnah discusses what time periods does one have to pray the different prayers. We know should say 108 on the top right corner. You guys have it? Should be the top page.
All these
are 108. Okay, so could I have all of yours back? Thank you. Okay, so we have enough copies. Just wait, put it in the nizonit and give me back. No, it's better this way. You want to collate? Okay, collate it. Go for it. Thank you. Okay, so the Mishnah discussed the times during which we could say the different prayers. We know the Shacharis prayer must be said in the morning up to 4 hours into the day. When the Mishnah discussed times, so they were working with sundials, so when they speak about hours into the day, they're talking about percentages of the day. When we say Shema may be read till 3 hours into the day, we mean until a quarter of the daylight hours. When we say prayer may be prayed until 4 hours into the day, we mean a third of the daylight hours. That is what's called in Talmudic terms, Sha'ot Zmaniot. hours that are relative to the time, how many daylight hours there are. And if you think about the sundials they were working with, makes a lot of sense, right? Okay, so our Mishnah had said that the Musaf prayer may be prayed all day long. We say that a person should pray Musaf up to 7 hours into the day. V'nikah posheah. And if you detained your Musaf prayer beyond noontime, beyond the seventh hour, so then it's considered like he wasn't careful. He was willingly uncareful with the requirement to pray the Musaf prayer. Where is this relevant? You could still pray Musaf. You could pray Musaf till nightfall.
Even if you willfully delayed,
it's improper, but you may. Yeah, I mean, it's improper that you delayed it that much, but if you've hit that hour and you haven't yet prayed Musaf, so what you have to do is pray then, yeah? This becomes relevant on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You come to Minyan, they daven a long Shachris, Kriyas HaTorah. By the time they hit Musaf, it's late. So ideally, all shuls try to make Musaf before the seventh hour. That we at least say our silent Musaf sometime early. This year it's even more important because you're not allowed to fast till halfway through the day on Rosh Hashanah. And certainly on Shabbos. This year Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So the shuls will try to start early and get a relatively early end to the Rosh Hashanah prayers in the morning. So we could eat before noon. What they might do at the Machon, what they always do is they have a Kiddush. Before Musaf, they have a Kiddush, that way no one's fasting, everyone's eating. Yeah?
When is the first hour in the day?
So the first hour is, we divide the daylight hours. So we go from sunrise till sunset. We divide that to 12.
So that would be first hour.
Dawn plus one. You divide it into 12 equal parts. Think of a sundial. Now, I'm glossing over the answer to your question. If you want, look at TorahForMe.org. We have a shiur just on this topic, how we divide the daylight hours and the times for prayer, because technically we sometimes begin with something that's called Alos HaShachar. Alos HaShachar is an hour and a half or an hour and a quarter before dawn. And for most halachot, we say that's when day begins. Day doesn't begin at nates, when you first see the ball of the sun, which is what we would call in common terms sunrise, but rather the day, halachically, for almost every purpose, the day really begins an hour and a half before that. So on fast days, for example, we begin an hour and a half before that, the fast days that are relevant by day only. And all mitzvot that must be performed during the daylight hours can only be performed then. And there too, when we say an hour and a half, we mean shavachet zmaniyot. Meaning you take the daylight hours, divide them by 12, and then one and a half of those before sunrise. And again, I'm glossing over some points. Because the question is, what do I divide by 12? Do I go from sunrise, or do I go from that hour and a half before sunrise? You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what we have.
Like,
ah, very good. Very good. I'm glad you caught on. So there's all class on that. We can't do that here.
Can you
say
that online?
Yes, it is. Yeah. If you can't find it, send me an email.
Okay.
I'll send you the link. Okay, I'll try to find it. Rabbi Zera, the Talmud now tells us the following story. Rabbi Zera ki avachalesh migil sei. When Rabbi Zera got tired of repeating his learning, Hava Amar, he used to say, Ezil ve'etze tiv apitcha debei Rabbi Natan Bartuvia. He said, I'll go sit by the entrance to the academy of Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvia. Amar, he said, Ki chalti rabbanan, when the rabbis pass by, Eiku mikamayu, I'll stand in their honor, Vakabeligra, and I'll get reward. I'll get wages. He says, you know, I need a break. I can't learn now. I need a break. What am I going to do? Let me go to the entrance where all the rabbis walk in and come out. Every time they walk in and come out, I'll stand up. I'll give them honor. At least I'll be doing some kind of mitzvah. So this is something that we should learn from. When we take a break, and we do have to take a break from our learning every so often, we should do positive things with that time. You guys could probably find a better exercise than standing up in front of rabbis. You could go and volunteer at a soup kitchen. There are a lot of opportunities. Be'ez Hashem, sometime within the next few weeks, we're going to go down the block to an organization called Efrat to volunteer there. You guys, I assume you haven't yet. Efrat is an organization that helps people who want to abort because they can't afford to have a child. They help them afford having a child and not abort. And they've brought over 30,000 babies to the world. So they need volunteers to help them pack the all the things they bring the expecting parents. So there's not a shame that's on the agenda this month. We'll go volunteer there. But there are many organizations within a 5 minutes walking distance from here. A person needs a break. Let him do something positive with his break. So that's what Rabbi Zera used to do. Nafak. So he went there to sit and take his break, and at least he'll do something positive. He'll give honor to the rabbis. Every time they walk by, he'll stand up. You see where it says Shum on the right hand side? There's a parenthesis. You see the parentheses in the middle of the page?
Yeah.
Go down three lines to the middle of the line by the period.
Okay.
After that it says Nafak. You have it? Nafak ata amnatan baktubia. Page 108.
Yeah.
Want to show the other guys? You guys have it? Nafak. Nafak means came out. Ata Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvia. Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvia came out. So he comes out of his own academy. He's standing there. He figures he'll see the other rabbis. The chief rabbi walks out. So the Rashiva walks out. So he asked him, you know what? I've been sitting out here taking a breather. Who said halacha in the academy? Who said halacha in the base medrash? Amale, so he said to him, Hachi amar Rav Yochanan. This is what Rav Yochanan taught. En halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion, d'amar, mitpalel adam shel musaf, achakach mitpalel shel mincha. That Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that if you find yourself in the afternoon, you've overslept. You just landed in Israel, it's Rosh Chodesh, you wake up, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now you got to play catch-up, right? So you missed Shachris Yidamna on the plane. Suddenly you came to Machon Meir, you learn you have to daven Musaf on Rosh Chodesh. So you say, gee, do I daven Mincha first or Musaf first? Which comes first? So Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that you daven Mincha first and then Musaf. That you daven Musaf and then Mincha. So Rabbi Yochanan taught in the academy that that's not so. If you hit 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you haven't yet davened either one, first daven the mincha, then the musaf. Now, this is very relevant on Rosh Hashanah, because according to this halacha, if we don't start davening musaf, and suddenly it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're running very late here at Machon Meir, everyone's been singing, and now we want to start davening musaf, and really, we should daven mincha first. That's what the Gemara just said. If you've delayed your musaf so late that you can either daven musaf or mincha, then technically mincha should come first. Amalei, so he said, Rabbi Yochanan amcha, did Rabbi Yochanan teach that? Now you guys know Rabbi Yochanan was the chief rabbi of Israel who composed the Jerusalem Talmud. We have Rabbi Yochanan in the time of the Mishnah, we have Rabbi Yochanan in the time of the Talmud. So Rabbi Yochanan was a big rabbi in Israel. He asked him, did Rabbi Yochanan say that? Quick story about Rabbi Yochanan? Yeah? We'll pause for a story? Okay. Rabbi Yochanan was a very, very, very good-looking person. And there was a student from the academy who had left the academy and become a chief bandit. He had two partners. His name was Reish Lakish. He was the head of the bandits. And Reish Lakish and his two partners used to sit on the mountaintops, and whoever came by, they'd come down and loot them. So Reish Lakish had left Machon Meir, he left the academy, became a chief bandit, and now Rabbi Yochanan is swimming across the Jordan, and Reish Lakish comes down, puts down his briefcase on the side of the Jordan, takes one leap, crosses the Jordan, and he's ready to pounce on Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan sees him, he remembers him from the academy, and he says, what, Mike, you just crossed that Jordan with one leap? Your strength should be in Torah study. Reish Lakish takes a look at the beautiful Rabbi Yochanan coming out of the Jordan, and he says, and your beauty should be on a woman. Rabbi Yochanan says to him, you know, I have a sister who's better looking than me. If you join me and come learn, I'll get her to marry you. So Reish Lakish says, fine, I just got to get my stuff from the other side of the Jordan. So he takes a run, and he's about to leap, and he sees he doesn't have it in him anymore. He can't leap back. What happened? Once he agreed to learn Torah, he didn't have the strength he had before. He hadn't opened a book. But the Torah takes the strength out of you. And here we'll begin with the first point you guys should remember. You will need more strength to succeed in learning Torah than anything else you ever did in your life. The Torah takes the strength out of you. Even if you were able to do all the college courses, calculus, pre-calculus, quantum physics, you could do all of this on 3 hours of sleep, you won't succeed in learning Torah. If you want to learn Torah, you got to give it your all. Adam ki amut be'ol. In order to succeed in learning Torah, one's got to put die in this tank. You put all you got into it. That's the only way to succeed. And you can't go on less sleep than that. Even if you've done everything else in life on less sleep, you'll see you won't succeed in learning Torah. The only way to succeed is getting a good night's sleep and putting everything you got into it. Reish Lakish, the minute he decides he's going to learn Torah, he's just made that decision, he can't jump back. It's okay. He leaps, he jumps, hops, skips his way back. He gets his briefcase, comes to learn, and he becomes very, very big. Every page in Talmud, we have arguments between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. We'll skip to the end of the story.
Did he get the girl?
Yeah, he marries Rabbi Yochanan's sister. We'll skip to the end of the story. There are a lot of details which we mentioned, those of you who were here last year, right? Even though we mentioned the story last year. Oh, so no one here knows the story? So we'll tell you the details, okay. One day they're arguing about different weapons. When are these weapons considered a finished product that they have certain halachic status? Rav Yochanan says, when you finish fashioning them, Reish Lakish says, no. You have to cauterize them. After you finish fashioning them, you heat them up in the fire, you stick them in cold water, then they're ready to be used. So Rav Yochanan says, I see you still have it in you, you former chief bandit, you. Reish Lakish says, what have I gained? When I was with the bandits, they called me rabbi, chief bandit. Now I'm with the rabbis, they call me chief rabbi. Here, even now, we've been studying for so many years, you're still mentioning my past. Rav Yochanan got very upset. He said, what do you mean? I killed myself over bringing you close to God. What do you mean, what have you gained? After all these years, after all you've learned, that you can say that? Rav Yochanan was upset. And Rav Yochanan was such a big rabbi that when he got upset, in heaven, they held it against Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish became ill. Reish Lakish became sicker and sicker. And his wife, Rav Yochanan's sister, comes to Rav Yochanan and begs him, pray, forgive him. The guy, he was wrong, forgive him. Reish Lakish died. Rav Yochanan lost his top student. They bring another student, and every time Rav Yochanan would say something, so that student would bring him 20 proofs. So Rav Yochanan said, what do I need you for? I know what I'm saying is right. I need you to ask. I don't need you to prove what I'm saying is right. I didn't make it up. I'm saying what I learned. And as much as they tried, they couldn't get a student like Reish Lakish. At one point, Rav Yochanan was teaching, and he said, you know, everything it says in the prophets, every form of wisdom can be found in the Torah. I wonder where you could find this thought. It says in Proverbs, Ivelet Adam Tesalef Darko, man's own foolishness messes up his way, Ve'al Hashem Yizach Libo, and he turns in and he gets angry at God when he messed up his own life. Whenever we mess up, we turn to God. That concept that it says in Proverbs, where does it say that in the Torah? So Reish Lakish's son, as a kid, is sitting in front of him, and he laughs at him. He says, what do you mean? Sure, it says it. It says the brothers sold Yosef, and after they sold Yosef, they went to Egypt, they bought the goods, they came back with the goods, they see they got the money was returned, they're scared there's a plot against them, what do? They open up the bags, they see the money's being returned, and they say, Mazot asalanu elokim, what did God do to us? Did God do it to them, or did they do it to themselves? You see, it says it in the Torah. And that was the second line that Reish Lakish's son already showed him how smart he was. He didn't know who was the kid sitting in front of him. Now, Rav Yochanan had very long eyelashes. He couldn't see without taking tweezers and lifting his eyelashes. So he said, get me my tweezers. I want to see who that sharp kid is. Well, his mother was standing right there, and his mother said, son, you get out of here. She grabbed her son and pulled him out of the academy. She said, I don't want him to kill you like he killed your father. Look what he did to your father. I'm not leaving you around with my brother. Was her own brother. Our sages say that the day Reish Lakish died, his two partners, the two thieves, they died as well. And they all came up to heaven together. So Reish Lakish was escorted to heaven, and his partners were escorted down. So they said, well, wait a second, we were all partners. Why are we going to different places? So God said, he did tshuva and you didn't. You continued your life this way. He changed his life. So yeah, he was a bandit, but he was the chief bandit, chief robber. But he changed his life. So that's why he's going a different direction.
Why would you need tweezers? Why can't you just go like
this? I don't know. I've never seen a person with such long eyelashes. I don't understand it either. I don't know. I guess they were so shaggy that it was hard to take hold of them. And if it was so heavy that he couldn't lift them with his own eyebrows, so...
His eyes were always closed.
His eyes were always closed.
His eyelashes were still.
Right. Which leads us to a whole different discussion about all the rabbis who were blind. There were many rabbis who were blind, but that's not for today. At any rate, Rav Yochanan went insane. When Rav Yochanan couldn't have a partner to learn with, he felt so bad over the death of his prime disciple, Rish Lakish, that he went mad. That's what the Talmud says. He lost it. But, till that day, Rav Yochanan was the chief rabbi of Israel. He led the Jewish people, and he was the one who composed the Jerusalem Talmud. So Rav Yochanan taught that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda had said, first we pray Musaf and then Mincha. Rav Yochanan taught it's not that way. Amar le Rav Yochanan amcha? So he asked him, Rav Yochanan taught that? You sure it was Rav Yochanan who said that? Amar le, he said to him, in. The word in the Talmud means yes. Tana mine albein zimne. I learned it from him 40 times. What was this halacha that he learned 40 times? Who remembers? What did we just say? Why did he review 40 times? That if you hit the afternoon and you haven't prayed Musaf, you pray Mincha before you pray Musaf. You guys got it, and I said it twice. Why does he have to review it 40 times? What does that tell us about learning? These chief rabbis would review a simple halacha like that 40 times. This concept is quoted in the Talmud and Megillah as well. They taught halacha that when you read Megillah at night, you have to read it again by day. We read the Megillah twice, once at night, once by day. It says the rabbi learned this and he reviewed it 40 times. Would we review such halacha 40 times? We'd say, I got it. No, it's easy, right? What's the big deal? It's teaching us something. Why did they remember the Talmud like the palm of their hands? And we don't. You've heard of the term Gaon? You guys heard of the term Gaon? Gaon in modern Hebrew means genius. There was a period called the Gaonic period. There was the period of the Mishnah, the period of the Talmud, and then there was the period of Sagoram and the period of the Gaonic period, before the Rishonim. The Gaon Mivilna was given that nickname. But really, there was a period. In order for a person to be ordained Gaon, he had to be tested on all these volumes of the Talmud by heart. That's what he needed to do. They test them all volumes by heart. Gaon has the numeric value. You guys know Aleph has the numeric value of 1, Beis of 2, Gimel of 3, Vav of 6, Nun of 50, Gimel 3, Aleph 1, that's 4, Vav 6, 10, Nun 50, 60, 60 tractates in the Talmud. A Gaon had to be tested on all 60 by heart. How did they get there? Because they did what this rabbi did. He reviewed 40 times a simple halacha like that, 40 times. And they were smarter than we are. So, Rav Kook once wrote his son, today's his yard sign. So, he wrote to his son, I'm shocked, you think you could remember something? You've only learned it after you've reviewed it 7 times. 10 times is when you start reviewing. We have to learn from that. You know, right now, everything we're hearing is easy. The question is, what will we retain in 2 years? So, does anyone here have anything that they've reviewed 40 times in their lives? I know prayer, I hope you've reviewed. What?
ABC.
Think about it. Here we're learning complex concepts. With time, you'll be able to build much better if you retain it. Amal Lei, so he asked him, how come you reviewed this 40 times? Chazailach, is it the single thing you've ever heard in Rav Yochanan's name? So you reviewed it 40 times, you wanted to make sure you didn't forget it? Ochadit hilach, or is it a new thing? Chada, one, chadat, like chadash. In Aramaic, the tuf and the shin are interchangeable. Yeah, chadat is like chadash, or is it new to you? Amal Lei chadatili. It's new to me, mishum demesav kaliv Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, because I'm uncertain whether this was said by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi or him. I wasn't sure, so I reviewed it 40 times to get it right. You guys know the story of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, it was time for him to die. So the angel of death came and told him, it's time to die. So he said, no. So he said, what do you mean, no? He said, well, I mean, if you're telling me it's my time to die, God obviously told you to tell me. If God told you to tell me, then God's obviously letting me say no. So he said, no, God doesn't let you say no. God says that you have a last wish. What do you want? So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, I want you to take me to see the Garden of Eden, but I'm scared of you. I can't fly around with you. You got to give me your sword. If you give me your sword, we could go around. So he asked God. God says, fine. He takes the sword, takes him. He says, there's the Garden of Eden. He says, no, I want to see a close-up look. He says, I can't take you in. He says, okay, but take me to the top of the wall. Let me look inside. So he takes him to the top of the wall. He says, that's the Garden of Eden? He says, yeah. He says, why can't we go inside? He says, I can't enter there. That's the Garden of Life. That's me. I'm dead. He says, really? Jumps in. So the angel of death is standing there and says, hey, you come out here. I have to take your life. What's with you? He says, no. Come get me. I can't. I know. Okay, give me back my sword. No. So he says, what do you mean, no? I still have to take your life. It can't be over like this. He says, bye, I'm leaving, no? So the angel of death goes to God and says, what am I supposed to do with him? So God says, check him out. If throughout his life he never went back on his word, whenever he said he'll do something, he did it, then now you can't, that's it. You can't touch him. But if he once went back on his word throughout his life, then we'll kick him out. We'll send him out to you. So they checked, and he never went back on his word. Throughout his life, he had never gone back on his word. So the angel of death says, but I need my sword back. So God says, talk to him, between you and him. So the angel of death comes to the wall, and he says, listen here, I got a job to do in this world. You got to give me my sword back. So he says, no. So he says, what do you mean, no? I'm doing my job in this world just like you're doing your job in that world. God wants people to die. You got to give me my sword back.
I mean, nobody was dying during this whole period.
So it seemed to mean that this whole period might have taken milliseconds. I mean. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, fine, I understand. I have to give it back to you, but we have to cut a deal. And he cut a deal about women miscarrying. He limited his potential to cause that. And he also told him, you know, you scare the wits out of people. When people die, they always look like they've just seen a ghost. Do it in a more humane way, and then sometimes you kill people and you make it look like you slaughtered them like an animal. I want people to die, make more natural deaths, make easier deaths on people. The Talmud describes what his conditions were, but we have to know how to understand what the terms the Talmud uses, and they come to a deal. And ever since then, death was different in the world. So he gives him back his sword, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is one of the 10 people who go into the Garden of Eden alive. So now we're learning about Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. I'm not Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua, the son of Levi, taught, Kol ha-mitpalel tfila shel musafin la'achar sheva shot, whoever prays the Musaf prayer after 7 hours, le-Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, al ava katuv omer, nugay mimoed asafti mimechayu, the verse says, those who have delayed the set time, I've collected them nonetheless, they've come from you, me'ei mashma dainu gei lishna detavrohu. How do we know that this means that these who are late, really, they get broken over that? Kedem tagim Rav Yosef, like Rav Yosef used to translate. Rav Yosef, you guys know about Rav Yosef? Okay, sorry about Rav Yosef. Who was Rav Yosef? So, first thing we have to know about Rav Yosef was that he was blind. Completely blind. He couldn't see at all. You know, he was once standing, and there was a procession coming with the king. And there was one of the disciples, the new disciples of the New Testament. And he started mocking him. He said, you old rabbi, you don't know anything. You're all blind. So he said to him, I'll show you that I know better than you. They start blowing the trumpets. The guy says, oh, the king's here. Rabbi Yosef says, no, it's not the king. He looks. He says, you're right. How'd you know? He says, watch. They start drumming the drums. The guy says, the king's here. Rabbi Yosef says, no, that's not the king. He looks. He says, you're right. How'd you know? Stage after stage, the guy gets so excited. He says, the king's here. Every time, Rabbi Yosef tells him, no, it's not the king. Finally, it's silent. Rabbi Yosef says, watch. Now's the king. And then the king walks in. He says, how'd you know? He says, because we have a tradition that the royal throne, the way royalty works, is similar to the way it works in heaven. And in the prophet, it's described that God has all kinds of noises preceding when God comes. And when it's finally silent, that's when God comes to the stage. So that's how I know. So Rav Yosef, even though he was blind, he was the master of Talmud and Mishnah and Braisa. He knew everything by heart. They once had a dream, and Rav Yosef was told, people who look in the stars, they told him, you're going to be the head of the academy, and after 2 years, you'll die. So the head of the academy died, and they asked, who should they appoint as the head of the academy? One candidate was Rabbi Bar Nachmani. You guys want the long version of the story or the short version? Long version. Yeah? Okay, I'll try to fit it all in before Meir. One candidate was Rabbi Bar Nachmani, the other was Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef had a fantastic memory. He remembered everything backwards and forwards, and he knew the stuff well. Rabbi Bar Nachmani didn't have as good a memory, but he knew how to delve, he knew how to do pilpul, he could get the depths of the story. So they sent to Israel who should be the head of the academy. So they told them Rav Yosef, because when you could quote things like no one else can, then that gives you the capacity to know everything. So it's better a guy who knows everything. Rav Yosef had heard that he died two years after he becomes the head of the academy. He said, with all due respect, make Rabbi Bar Nachmani head of the academy. Fine. Rabbi Bar Nachmani was head of the academy for 20 years. At the end of 20 years, some people went to the authorities and they said, twice a year, this guy draws in such crowds, you guys don't collect any taxes for 2 months. Because all the crowds are coming to listen to his lectures. Before Rosh Hashanah, he teaches all the laws of Sukkot, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. Guys, you should start preparing. Take a kitzur Shulchan Aruch. This month is the month to prepare. There are a lot of anachot you have to know. So that's what they used to do back then. They give a lecture before Rosh Hashanah, all the laws of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and before Pesach. So 2 months out of the year, you know, it's a huge percentage. You don't get any taxes. So they sent an officer to pick up Rabbi Bar Nachmani. Now Rabbi Bar Nachmani, you should just get a picture. He took in an orphan called Nachmani, named him Abaye, after his own father. His father's name was Nachmani. The orphan's name was Nachmani. He didn't want to always use his father's name when he's calling the kid. So when he adopted this orphan, he named him Abaye. You got my father's nickname. We'll expand on Abaye a different time. So anyways, Rabbi Bar Nachmani hears that the king wants him. So he runs. He goes to one city, they chase him there. He goes to the next city, they chase him there. He goes to the third city, they chase him there. He comes back to the first city, he's hiding in an inn, and the king's detective enters the inn. He sits down to drink at the inn, and they do something there by mistake that causes some evil spirit to take a hold of him. So they come to Rabbi Bar Nachmani, and they say, what are we going to do? He's the king's detective. If they catch us over this, we're finished. So he tells them how to cure the guy. They cure him. And the guy says, I know Rabbi Bar Nachmani is here. He takes out his detective stuff. He finds Rabbi Bar Nachmani. He says, I know you're the guy. I know I'm supposed to give you, but I won't give you over. I know you saved my life now. I won't give you over, but one condition. If they torture me, I won't stand up to the torture. Fine. A short while later, they catch Rabbi Bar Nachmani. Rabbi Bar Nachmani is taken into prison. And he stands there and he prays. He says, God, I don't want to go like this. So the wall of the prison falls down and he runs. He's running. He comes to a river. He climbs up a tree. And he's sitting there. What does a guy like Rabbi Bar Nachmani do when he's on the run? He sits and learns. So he's sitting on top of the tree and he's learning. The Talmud tells us in the...
He's just remembering.
Well, that's the way they learned back then. They reviewed by heart. So as he's learning in heaven, the Talmud says there was an argument. We don't have time to go into the details of the argument. The Academy of Heaven said one way, and God said the other way. So they said, who's going to call the shot? They said, the chief rabbi of Israel, that's Rabbi Bar Nachmani. So we got to bring him up here. So the angel of death is sent down to bring up Rabbi Bar Nachmani. But he's busy learning, so we have a tradition that King David also, when the angel of death came to take him, he was learning, he couldn't touch him. So the angel's standing there, and he's waiting for Rabbi Bar Nachmani to stop, but he doesn't stop. And then a wind rustles through the trees, and Rabbi Bar Nachmani thinks he's hearing the footsteps of the soldiers. He figures they've caught up to me, I don't have strength to keep running. He turns to God and says, God, I can't live like this, let me go. So God says, but one question, am I right or is the academy right? We're having this argument. So he says, Taho, Taho, he rules like God. We don't pass in halacha that way. But anyways, that's a separate question. And then he dies. So then the angel could take him. So Rabbi Bar Nachmani dies. We don't have time to finish the story. It's time for Avit. And Rav Yosef becomes the head of the academy. And a different time. Okay, now,